How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Josh Nason here on Figure Four Daily. It is September 11th, 2012, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We are joined today by Ariel Helwani, journalist for MMAfighting.com. He is an MMA insider for UFC Tonight, other UFC coverage on Fuel TV, host of the weekly MMA Hour show on MMAfighting.com. And Josh has alerted me that you have a pizza in New York named after you. Is that true, Ariel?
It's actually in New Jersey. It is the Ariel Helwani pizza. It consists of a flat dough. They call it matzah pizza, but it's more just like a flat dough. Egg, cheese, Canadian bacon, and a little bit of ketchup, of course. I'm Jewish. I'm Canadian. They put it all together. It's Mark Henry, who's the boxing coach of Frankie Edgar and many other fighters. He owns a pizzeria in New Jersey called Pino's Pizzeria, and they made this in honor of me. And he actually told me that Frankie Edgar doesn't even have his own pie, but Ariel Helwani does. The biggest honor of my life, no doubt.
Wow. Now, before we get into more mixed martial arts, I'm sure you are quite aware of what happened with Jerry the King Lawler on Raw last night. You, of course, have... I actually don't know if we've talked a whole lot about your wrestling fandom, but I know that you're a fan of Jerry the King Lawler, and thoughts on what happened here today?
Yeah, well, actually, I was I used to be a fanatic. I mean, literally a fanatic. You want to know how big of a fan I was? I used to order the weekly Wednesday TNA pay-per-views.
Wow.
When I was in college, yes. I was that big of a fan back in the day. Over time, I became less and less of a fan, and that's a whole other story for another show, I guess. But I was actually tuning into yesterday's Raw. I don't watch it on a weekly basis, but I tuned in because I'm from Montreal. They were in Montreal. I heard about Bret Hart coming back, and I do enjoy the work of Paul Heyman and CM Punk. So, and I thought it was all very interesting, and it was very bizarre. You know, another tough call continuing the show without the commentary. I thought Michael Cole did as good of a job as you can ask of someone in that position, but still not quite sure if continuing the show was the right call, and especially with Bret being there, a very eerie thing. So, I'm told actually that I know some people there, and the EMTs in Montreal did a great job. So that makes me very proud as a Montrealer. But still not quite sure that was the right call, considering how big of a part of, you know, Jerry Lawler is in the show.
Yeah, there was some footage today of the EMTs like right after it happened, and he went down, and they were on the scene, and it was maybe 90 seconds before they had him to the back, probably even less than that. I mean, they were so on the ball, and I just, based on reports, they saved his life. So, yeah, he's still in intensive care in a cardiac unit for everybody listening right now, but we'll have more throughout the day. You've had a number of wrestling stars on your show, including a very extensive interview with CM Punk. I guess talk a little bit about your decision to bring some of these guys on the show and some memories of some of the better episodes.
Well, you know, I have a lot of respect for pro wrestling. I have a lot of respect for pro wrestlers. I truly, truly love that form of entertainment, and it's strange. I recently had a son, or I guess my wife had the son, and he's now my son as well, but you know what I'm saying. She gave birth to him.
Sure, and, congratulations.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know, I just, since I've been thinking about how I want to raise him and what we're going to do together and you know, what we're going to share as far as our interests, and it kind of got me thinking, like, you know, am I going to raise him to be a wrestling fan? Is this something that I want to do? I had great memories being a wrestling fan. So, I don't know, maybe a little nostalgic and maybe a little more open to checking it out again. And I always find it very interesting. I think there's a deep connection between MMA and pro wrestling. I find it very silly when people want to ignore that. And yesterday was another sort of example of how, you know, the MMA fans, I was tweeting news about Jerry Lawler, the MMA fans, they get so mad when you talk about pro wrestling. You can talk about your fantasy football team. You can talk about, you know, baseball, basketball. That's all good. No one cares. But once you bring up pro wrestling, holy moly, you're the worst person in the world. Like, you're beyond scum. And they're just so uncomfortable, because I think a lot of them used to be pro wrestling fans, and they feel like they've grown up now, and that's for, you know, that's for the teenagers, that's for the high school kids. And I think it's very silly. There's a huge connection there, and even people like Dana White will admit that there's a connection there. So I find it interesting to talk to these guys, especially the guys that, you know, have a deep appreciation. Guys like CM Punk, who train in jiu-jitsu, who are huge fans of the sport. Guys like Paul Heyman, Bret Hart, you know, talking to him about his appreciation and whether or not they would have done it back in the day if it was as popular, Booker T and The Rock. I've talked to a lot of them, and it's fun. It's just, it's always fun to see guys in their, you know, in their field talk about our sport that we love so much. So I enjoy it. And plus, there's a little, you know, the 12-year-old inside of me is kind of going like, I can't believe I'm talking to Bret Hart right now. And that's fun as well.
I've always noticed that. I'm sure you were just talking about it. These MMA fans, just the very idea of anything related to pro wrestling is such an outrage to them. And I never really understood it either. I don't know. I mean, it would be one thing to me if WWE was pushed as fake. I shouldn't even say fake. If it were pushed as MMA, but it was worked mixed martial arts, then I could understand these MMA fans being upset about what it is. But to me, it's patently obvious what WWE is. I think it's patently obvious to everybody. It's a show. I don't think anybody's trying to fool anybody as to what it is. And so when it's differentiated so much from mixed martial arts, I don't understand the absolute hatred for it. But you have those fans, and I'm sure you've met many of them on Twitter.
Oh, wow. It's unbelievable. I mean, they come out, and they're just so...
You'll hear from them today, in fact.
Oh, I can't wait. Yeah, it's almost disappointing that these people actually like me and took the time to follow me. Like, I don't want anything to do with you. I despise you. I find you all very disgusting human beings. Like, even if I was talking about... I mean, at the end of the day, I am one of those people when it comes to Twitter and social media. I know why people follow me, so I don't talk about my fantasy team, even though I don't even do fantasy. But you know what I'm saying. I don't talk about usually other things that I'm interested in. I never talk about my personal life because I know you're following me because I'm an MMA reporter and you want MMA news. But to me, in this particular case, Jerry Lawler is an icon. He's a legend. He's someone that I can guarantee 99% of MMA fans out there know who he is. And you know, I think, like I said, there's a connection there. And when something big happens, I ordered WrestleMania this year for the first time in maybe 6-7 years because I felt that there was a connection. Obviously, there were the rumors about Brock, but, you know, Rock, Cena, all that stuff. There is a connection there. We all grew up, we watched it, and now I think a lot of us have graduated into MMA fans. So they can say what they want. I'm not going to change my ways, but I hear it when I do things like tweeting about it last night and when I interview guys like CM Punk and Bret, you'll get, you know, 85%, that was awesome, and then, when are you going to stop with this wrestling crap? Oh, just don't watch it. Don't listen to it. Don't read it. But they feel like they need to be heard, so be it.
One more wrestling question, then we'll get into mixed martial arts, and actually it has a tie-in here. Brock Lesnar, of course, I'm pretty sure we've talked to you on this show about the incident where you... It's actually amazing the way that this all worked out. You just yes. happened to be there when Undertaker and Lesnar had their infamous confrontation. And now here we are. It's 2012. And I should note that at this moment, the idea is not to do Undertaker and Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. They're thinking about doing Triple H and Lesnar 2. But there has certainly been discussion, and who knows what will happen. It could end up with that match on pay-per-view on WrestleMania. I guess, first off, your thoughts on it today, looking back, the way the whole thing kind of came about, what do you think actually happened? I mean, was it really right place, right time? Or, I don't know, did people know where you were, and it was like, okay, if you do this, Ariel is over there, and, you know, what do you think actually happened there? And also thoughts on Paul Heyman saying that he does not feel Brock Lesnar will ever do another fight.
Well, I'm going to respond to your questions, and then I want to ask you a question about this, because I actually don't think we ever have talked about this before. I could be wrong. I know I did a lot of interviews after, but I'm not sure I ever talked to you guys about it, so... First off, I mean, it was absolutely, I don't know, the pro wrestling / MMA gods were smiling down upon me. Maybe it was because of the fact that I spent so many Wednesday nights in college ordering TNA pay-per-views that they threw me a bone here. But yeah, I saw Undertaker there. I first realized, of course, I know that wrestling fans are very passionate and there a lot of them are online and they gobble everything up. I remember interviewing, another awesome moment was when I interviewed, right after Brock beat Shane Carwin, I interviewed JR, Austin, Goldberg, and Heyman back to back to back in one clip, sitting front row talking about Lesnar's win, and that was just a very surreal moment. That clip got over 1 million views on YouTube, so I was like, all right, at the event, if I see a pro wrestling guy and there's a tie-in here, I'm going to interview them because clearly a lot of people are interested in this. So I see The Undertaker, I ask UFC PR, after the fight, can I interview The Undertaker and get his thoughts? They said, sure, but we're not sure if he's going to you know, if he's gonna be into it, so let's ask him. Actually, one of the people who works in PR for the UFC, Jim Byrne, is his name. He used to work in WWE, so he knew The Undertaker. So he went and asked him. Undertaker said yes. He was there with Michelle McCool. He said, yeah, he said, cool, hang around. And so we waited for the fight to be over. Fight ends. Of course, you know, Kane beats Brock. And boom, we walk right in. And it's fine. I just thought I was going to get his thoughts on the situation, the fight, and blah, blah, blah. And I was going to ask him that typical, you know, would you have done it? Of course, you know, he uses MMA moves, he wears the gloves, et cetera. And then all of a sudden, Brock walks by. That moment happens. And clearly, there's, like, some tension. But I'm not thinking. I mean, the last thing on my mind is that this is a work or anything, that they plan this. So I actually really do think that they want to fight. And my mind is buzzing. I believe you were in the press room.
I was. I think this was where we talked about it. But go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. And Meltzer was there, of course, and some other people. You know that I respect their opinions, and I wasn't quite sure. And then I got some calls. People telling me that it was all a work, and I started to think about it. And where you saw Brock walk, the fighters don't walk that way. That's like where Dana and Lorenzo sit during the fight. They usually walk the other way, like past the press row. So is it possible that after, you know, getting his butt kicked, that Brock had the presence of mind to see Undertaker get interviewed and walk there for this moment? I mean, I still have a hard time believing it, and that's the question I want to ask you. Like, if there has there ever been some clarity on the situation? But it was beyond surreal. I got like 4 or 5 million views on YouTube, TMZ, ESPN, all talking about it, and I'm still not quite sure what exactly happened or how it happened, but I will say that I can't believe that they're not going to capitalize, not on that moment, but I think everyone wants to see Brock Taker, especially with the streak and all that, and this is coming from a guy who's not that into wrestling anymore, but a Triple H Brock is the most boring matchup. I couldn't even care less about that. I mean, I can't believe that they would go that route. But my question to you is, has there been some clarity? Do we know that what was going on? Was I right place at the right time? I don't know. What do you think?
I was always given the impression that WWE wanted something to happen with Undertaker and Brock somewhere at the show where it would be captured on camera. And obviously they didn't clear this with Dana White or anybody. And I remember when that show was over, during the post-show press conference, Undertaker and McCool were in the back. And I remember thinking, it's kind of odd that they're back here, because I saw them, they were kind of walking around towards a press conference, and then eventually I never saw them again. They didn't actually show up. And I always kind of had the idea that maybe they were hoping that they could have done something. I think Vince's idea was, Brock's going to win, and he'll be at the press conference, and hopefully Undertaker can get back there, and, you know, it doesn't have to even, I mean, I'm not going to do like a pull apart or a crazy scene or anything like that, but just kind of be there and do something where it'll get caught on camera somewhere. And I think what happened to you was just like a complete coincidence, in the sense that you just happened to be there. And as a pro wrestler, I think that, yeah, Brock wasn't thinking about, hey, let me shoot an angle with Undertaker right now. Hey, let me make sure I walk this direction. Maybe, I don't even know if Paul was with him. I don't think he was. I can't remember. But Paul may have had the presence of mind to lead him towards you. But regardless, I think when he walked by Undertaker, I think both guys as wrestlers knew that they should do something here. I think Undertaker knew to stare him down. And I think that even in losing, Brock has done this for so long that he just knew enough to play off of it and then keep walking. And I think it was just a massive lucky coincidence for literally everybody involved. And I actually felt bad for you in a sense that you got a lot of people watching it on YouTube and everything, but then I'm sure you had all of these people insisting that it was a work that you were in on.
Yeah, that bothered me. But I can assure you, God is my witness, I knew nothing. As far as Paul is concerned, actually, as I was walking into the arena with the PR people, and they have to escort you when you have a camera inside the arena, Paul was leaving, and he was so distraught because Brock had just lost, and he says, I don't want to be here anymore. So Paul wasn't with him. Paul definitely didn't tell him. I mean, you know how close they are. So he had nothing to do with it. To me, what was so like amazing about the experience was how these guys, how just that mentality is ingrained in them to where they can stop on a dime and all of a sudden do this, you know, like no hesitation whatsoever, they're able to do it. I just hope if they do actually wrestle at some point, A, you know, they use the footage, but I mean, wouldn't it be awesome? I come out as, like, you know, the Jonathan Coachman, Todd Grisham, Mean Gene type, and then I say, aha, to all of you laugh in your face that I was in on it. Wouldn't that be great?
I was going to say special guest referee.
Oh, I'll do it. Or a special guest ring announcer. Or timekeeper, like the old days.
It's in New Jersey this year. This is your chance.
Yeah. You see? I'm going to work on that.
Sticking with it, this is actually very interesting stuff. I mean, you've talked to so many, in going through this list, Megan, yeah, Brian mentioned the Bret Harts, Steve Austins, the Goldbergs, Undertaker, Lesnar, and I want to ask a little bit more about the CM Punk interview, especially the environment and being in his place and all that. But I did want to ask you about someone you had on your show, I believe in his last month or so. Someone very familiar to our audience was Jim Ross, and someone that is, you know, talking about Jerry Lawler earlier. Someone that's been a major influence for you in listening to your MMA hour every single week and other interviews you do, you can kind of tell in your voice is like a real genuine thrill for you to talk to someone like Jim Ross. And I've seen you guys have interactions on Twitter, and I want to kind of talk to you about how that came together and your dialogue after that.
To be honest, I have no idea how that came together. As far as him even knowing who I was, I think I will admit, Paul Heyman and I have become friendly where we email a lot. You know, he was on my show maybe, what was it, 2 years ago? Or yeah, it was right after UFC 117. And that's one of, like, the longest interviews he's done, I think, after leaving WWE. Of course, he's back now. So I think he sort of opened the doors for me. And, you know, he got me an interview with Brock when he came to town to do a book thing. And I think that helped with CM Punk as well. So I'm not even sure. But, yeah, I mean, internally, you have to remember, a lot of people, it's actually very funny, and I hope this doesn't come across the wrong way. I was just outside my apartment right now going to get something to eat, and I was walking back, and this guy comes up to me. He's like, hey, are you Ariel Helwani? And I said, yeah. He's like, you know, I never stop celebrities on the street, but I just wanted to say hi. And I was like, I can't even believe that people would actually say that I'm a celebrity or a well-known person. And why I bring that up is that, like, when Jim Ross writes to me on Twitter, or anyone, like CM Punk or any of these guys, and Bill Goldberg has done, it's like, to me, I still feel like that 12-year-old kid, and it's very surreal. Regardless of what, you know, I feel about wrestling now, it is very, very surreal to be a guy in his 30s now who always dreamed of being a broadcaster, who sat on his couch in his basement watching this stuff for endless hours, and now these people even know my name. You know, it's just, I can't even put it into words. And having Jim Ross on the show was incredible. I mean, he was so nice, and even he gave me a compliment at the end. It's just, I keep using the word surreal, but it really is. So to have people that you looked up to now know you and even still compliment your way, who knows if it's sincere or not, but whatever, I'll take it. It's an amazing thing. So I hope everyone can experience that feeling that I get inside when moments like this happen. And that's really the best part of this job, like people giving you that recognition and that praise, people that you looked up to. I waited. I went to WrestleMania 18 when I was in college. I went to the fan access thing. So I only waited in one line, and that was to take a picture with JR and Jim Ross. They were, like, you know, in the fan booth thing, and I got the whole title. And now, you know, Jim Ross, it's crazy. It's crazy to be in this position a few years later.
And on those same lines, you mentioned CM Punk earlier, and we'll include in the show notes for this links to these interviews, which you can find on MMAfighting.com. CM Punk, that was a very long interview as well, and as our listeners will remember, I mean, that was really when he was at his apex, and really just something really fun and new seemed to be kind of going on in WWE at the time. We kind of saw what happened after that, but, I mean, you interviewed him in his condo, his apartment. There was a gi in the background, which you mentioned, and kind of explain how that came together and the experience of, I guess, at that time, kind of, again, that crossover appeal, and again, I'm sure you get a lot of hatred or so-and-so afterwards, again, from the MMA crowd that you're talking to a WWE star.
Yeah, you know, I give CM Punk a lot of credit because obviously that promo that he had in Las Vegas last year really helped get me interested. I mean, I remember, like, the next 2 weeks I was tuning into Raw, and I was thinking, I follow him on Twitter, and I remember the following week he was at, I believe it was a Cubs game, and he was like, oh, well, you know, I'm here while Raw is on. I was like, this is so cool. And then they did the thing at Comic-Con. I really loved the way it was, like, finally WWE is embracing social media, and they've reached 2012. Now it seems from watching the shows like they they've embraced it way too much. It's like nauseating how much we talk about social media. But, you know, I thought this was so great. This is so new age in a way. And of course, it came back so quickly, which I thought was a huge mistake. I understand it was SummerSlam and they had to sort of capitalize on it. But in the old days, it would have been great if he would have came back in, like, you know, October, November Survivor Series or a Rumble or something like that. But I give him a lot of credit because he really got me into it. And then I became somewhat friendly. He's a fan of MMA, as I said, and through Paul and whatnot. And there was that story that came out that he was going to walk out with Chael Sonnen, who is obviously a very big fan of pro wrestling as well. And then it got nicked. So I was just, amazingly, you know, I was just sitting in my hotel room, and I was like, wow, yeah, I wonder if we can get an interview. I know he's here. I don't know why I knew he was there, but, you know, in Chicago, I know he's from there, but I knew he was in town. And he said, yeah. And I was like, you know, I never want to, even with Brett or any of these guys when I'm in their hometown, I don't want to overstep my boundaries. Like, just come to my place. I was like, wow, this is crazy. And I mean, even if an MMA fighter would invite me to their place, that's a level of respect and trust to bring someone that you don't really know into your apartment. So it was really cool. He gave us a lot of time. I think it was like 33 minutes or something like that. And I really enjoyed it because he has great insight. Like, he's a huge fan. He tapes everything. He'll, you know, we'll talk randomly about some obscure fights and things like that, like on the undercard. He is a legitimate fan. So it's a very cool thing to see. I don't, I really think they kind of dropped the ball with him. I know they're trying to reinvent him, and I think the Paul Heyman thing is interesting, especially because they have that connection. But it's unfortunate, I think, that they weren't able to recapture that magic or at least keep it going that they had in Vegas last summer.
So one of the great things that has really kind of helped your rise, you know, with all the work you do, all the events you do, and so on, is I would think that you are essentially, I guess, forever linked or currently linked, or however you want to put it, with Dana White. It seemed to be the basically after every event, sometimes before the event, the press conferences and so on, the you know, 6 to 8 minute interviews that you do with Dana are some of the most viewed around with the interviews, and really you see a lot of copycats now of that style that you do in the talks and things like that. You have a very unique relationship with him. It seems to be you guys are, you know, with the big announcements when Strikeforce was sold, and some of these other big things that you're the guy that talks to him. Your interview last week on UFC Tonight, that was half an hour. Talk about how this, it's almost like, and I know that you, the people have mentioned the Howard Cosell thing to you a lot, but it's a very similar relationship between, to me, like Cosell and Ali, that there was always just, when there was someone talking to him, it always seemed to be Cosell. And with you, with Dana White, it always seems to be you. And how that relationship has developed and so on through the years.
Well, I appreciate that. And it's funny you say that because Cosell, I've read tons of books on him. Obviously, I wasn't really around when he was in his prime, but I've watched, obviously, a lot of clips, seen documentaries. And I did tell Dana a few years ago, which is a very ridiculous statement. I don't think I'm 1/100th as good as Cosell, and I probably never will be 1/50th as good as the guy. But I did say one time to him that I want to be the Cosell to your Ali, in the sense that every step of the way, when he has, and I got, you know, to the game a little late here, as far as, you know, him starting with the UFC, but every step of the way, when there's a big moment, I'd love to be there. And thus far, he's been very good to me. I really don't know, you know, I don't know how it happened or how I gained that trust. I first interviewed him at UFC 97, and it didn't start very well. That was in Montreal, and people think that I've been around for a long time. That was my first UFC event that I was credentialed to, and that wasn't too long ago. That was Anderson versus Talos Ladies, which was in 2009. That you know, that was a little over 3 years ago. And he was there at a EA Sport, no, not EA, it was a THQ event. They were coming out with a new video game, and there was a long line of people, and I finally got the opportunity because the UFC for a very long time didn't credential me. They just wanted nothing to do with me. I worked for a website called MMArated.com. Prior to that, I had my own little blog called JerryPark.com, which I actually interviewed Brian on a few times, and they wouldn't open their eyes and look at maybe my past, and they wanted nothing to do with, like, the MMA-only websites, which was devastating. I thought, man, like, what if I'm working for this site for 10 years? I'm never going to get in. Anyhow, over time, built their trust, ended up working for Versus and AOL, et cetera, and they finally let me in. And he's there. I wait in this line to interview him, and I get there, and my mic breaks. It just, like, the XLR cable to the camera just stops working. So I finally get to him, like, we're about to start the interview. I'm standing next to him. I'm standing to the president of the UFC, and my mic breaks, and I'm very nervous, and I was very upset. So we had to leave, go get in our car, drive, buy a new mic, to a place close by, come back, and thankfully he was still there. And he brings that up a lot. Like he said, I was really nervous and anxious and things like that. And I don't know if that, you know, maybe, you know, for whatever reason, like he liked that or whatever. But I think I just kept coming back, you know, over and over again. And I was respectful and professional. And I think he saw that I knew what I was talking about, did my research, et cetera. And I still, you know, I bring this up a lot. Woody Allen once said, and it stuck with me before my career started here in this sport, 80% of success is just showing up. And I said to myself when I started, I want to be at every event possible. And I want to be the guy because I don't think I'm that much better than anyone. I just think that I kept coming over and over again. So they had to talk to me. And a major milestone for me, I think, was being in Abu Dhabi for UFC 112. You know, that was obviously a low moment for him. And the fact that he took out the time to do like a 5-6 minute interview, that's the first interview I ever did that got over 1 million views. And for whatever reason, he really never said no to me. I mean, there's one or two times where he just wasn't in the mood. But I mean, he's never been in a worse mood than he was in Abu Dhabi. It was just, you know, or he had to be somewhere, he had to go catch a flight. He has literally never said no. And I think, you know, people like to criticize, and it's happened more and more now lately. But truly, why don't you ask Dana the hard questions? People always say to me. And then I sometimes respond, what do you want me to ask that I don't ask? When is he going to put a better fight on UFC 162? This is the most recent one. I feel like the card is lacking. That's the hard question. Like, the fans that criticize, I feel like for the most part, I walk away from most of the interviews. Of course, I'm always upset that I missed a few things, like that Fuel interview. I thought I missed a few things. But for the most part, I feel like I'm pretty, you know, I'm impartial and I'm biased. And I ask him questions. And when he asks for my opinion, like in that interview, I tell him that I thought it was unfair to solely blame John Jones. So I hope I could do it for many years to come. I hope that he gives me the time of day. And I do really, really appreciate it. Because he could say no. Many, many times he could say no. I mean, those nights, those press conferences, they last really, really long. And it's like 1, 2 a.m. on East Coast, 3 a.m. And he still says yes every time. So I tip my cap to him for that, and I really appreciate it.
I remember a while ago you gave the same analogy about 80% of the job is just showing up, and I'll never forget that. I don't even know why. It's just like you said it, and I don't want to say it was a revelation to me, because, I mean, I'm always here for this, but sometimes I'll be talking to other people, and they'll be, oh, you know, I really want to do this or this, and I always remember, I just told someone this the other day, about you, in fact, the idea you had at the beginning, which is just like, I am just going to be at every event. That was like your whole idea. I'm just going to be at every single event. So pretty soon, it's like I'm supposed to be there. And obviously, I think if you've been to a lot of UFC events, you've probably seen guys that also are trying to be at every event. And obviously, you have reached a level that they have not and probably never will. So there's more to it than just showing up. There's that other 20%, which you also have. But I always thought that was... I never really thought about that quote before, but... You know, it's true, and it worked out great for you. And I guess the question is, now, you mentioned that you haven't really been around forever. It's only been 2009, so we're talking 3 years now. But a lot of stuff has changed in 3 years. And just looking back from your first day until today, what is your thought of the proliferation of, you know, 18 million blogs? If you were at, and of course, the UFC, the Anderson, the last Anderson fight in Vegas, you know, a million press people there. Just what are some of your thoughts on how things are the same and how they're very different from 2009?
Part of it is like, wow, this is great. The sport is growing. You're seeing, you know, ESPN and Sports Illustrated and USA Today. I mean, we talk about the sport being mainstream and gaining mainstream coverage. I know they're not in print, they're not in the New York Times and you know, some other papers, but as far as, like, big names, I mean, it doesn't get much bigger than that. So I think we've reached a pretty good point, you know, Fox Sports, of course, et cetera, et cetera. So I think we're in a good place, but it has changed a lot, and I think part of it is there are a lot of events. You know, a few years ago, there weren't as many events, weren't as many pay-per-views. Now I go to all the events, whether it's for Fuel, MMA Fighting, or both some nights. And I've said it many times. I think that they would be better served having less events. And this is coming from a guy who works for Fuel. You know, I just think that you're going down that path that, again, going back to wrestling a few years back, I remember when they had the brand extension and they put on a lot of programming, Raw, SmackDown, all this stuff, and it just all became gray. And like there was a pay-per-view, you had to watch it no matter what. No matter what you were doing, you had to watch it. Same with UFC. But then once you get into the habit of, you know, maybe I'll skip this one and there's a free show coming up next week, I don't really need to buy this one, I think that's a dangerous game. And you lose the novelty of it all. So I think that has changed as far as like the coverage as well. I mean, like you said, there's a lot of blogs and things like that. And as Josh said as well, and I don't think it's a bad thing necessarily, but it's certainly changed my job. There's a lot of people. Back in the day, I remember there would be the media workouts. They would have a scrum, and then they'd be like, all right, Ariel, go and do your one-on-one. Now, you know, you have to wait in the line, and it's kind of like a cafeteria line, and, you know, you get your 3-4 minutes, don't go longer. And, you know, everyone's there and they're kind of all listening to your questions. And, you know, it's not the same because the guy's answering, you know, relatively the same stuff. 5, 6, 7 straight interviews, you don't get the same type of interview. So it certainly changed it. And, you know, there are times where I'm like, you know, it would be kind of interesting if I just didn't go to an event for 3-4 months and see, like, how it would be different for myself, how I would do it differently and things like that. Maybe do something different. You always want to kind of recharge your batteries and be fresh. But I can. I mean, I miss one event, and I get all these people writing to me on Twitter, oh, well, you know, you're slacking, and it's not the same without you. You get the good, the bad, but it's all kind of a compliment in a weird way. And I feel really bad and guilty. It's like this vicious cycle in me. I just can't. I'm like a junkie. I can't miss one. So I'm curious to see how, you know, because it is, I have a son, a lot of traveling and things like that, so I'm curious to see, and no off-season as well. So I am curious to see, like, where the job leads me 3, 4, 5 years from now, and I expect there to be a lot more people doing what I'm doing because I didn't really, I didn't reinvent the wheel. I didn't do anything out of the ordinary. I'm just doing an interview, but there are more and more people doing what I'm doing, so I think the novelty of it has gone away as well.
I know I have like a million more questions, but I know we're running a little bit low on time because coincidentally there is a UFC press conference coming up in about 20 minutes or so. The one question I did want to ask you though is coming from you went to Syracuse University and you have that journalism background, as do I, but I think that we are we're rarities almost in media covering the sport, and that because of that proliferation of blogs and just in people credentialed, and I think the accessibility to fighters that, I mean, even like sites, you know, BJ Penn has turned his own site into a media hub essentially. In general, I mean, I think that you're interested in stuff I've seen you talk about on Twitter before and talk about in your show is, where do you think that the MMA media is at today? Just, I want to say health-wise, but just obviously that we're not, you know, like ESPN and things like that. There's so many, you know, smaller sites and things like that. It feels like it hasn't matured fully yet. It's getting there, but then there's setbacks. And it seems like a lot of the media is trying to be friends as opposed to actual asking, quote unquote, the hard questions and being impartial like some of these bigger outlets. I was just wondering what your thoughts are as we go in the last stretch of 2012.
Yeah, that is a very, very interesting question. It's a question that I think about a lot. I love journalism. I love thinking about it, reading about it, talking about it, and I often try to evaluate where we are at because I feel like I'm a part of it now, and it's important. You know, we're all trying to compete and get the stories and get the interviews and the scoops and all that, but I do think that it would be good if there was more unity within MMA journalism. You know, most sports, if not all the major sports, boxing, football, baseball, basketball, they all have like a writers association. And of course, I think journalism has evolved, and there are a lot more than just writers out there in the media, but, you know, a media association, if you will. And I think we would be very well served having something like that because I think there are a lot of, you know, the great thing, and I want to be clear, as far as blogs go and all that, I love it. If it wasn't for the blogs and the internet, no one would know who I was, and I would probably not be doing this. So I love the fact that MMA is so young, and the athletes are so accessible on social media, and that you can interview them and that you can work your way up the ladder rather quickly. So I give credit to anyone who does that, and I hope many more, you know, young kids coming out of college or in college now strive to do that. But I think if we had some sort of group, some sort of association where we could teach the younger journalists and even some of the current ones, to be honest with you, as upsetting it may be to realize that, you know, you shouldn't be buddy buddies with these guys. You shouldn't wear a fighter T-shirt. You shouldn't call a fighter bro at the press conference. You know, there is certain very small things that you can fix that I think would go a very long way as far as our sport being taken seriously. And there are other things as well that go on behind the scenes and whatnot. And I'm not trying to point fingers at anyone, but I think that it would be great if, you know, and let's be honest, there are things that happen that happen to us that wouldn't fly in other sports. I mean, you know, the credentials and all that. I mean, there's a lot of things that the sport needs to sort of, you know, look at and grow up and evolve as far as media is concerned. And I'd love to be a part of, you know, that evolution. I don't think having a media association would be something that's combative where we need to like stand up and fight the promoters and things like that. It's more about helping each other and ourselves growing up and you know, you get like veterans like Dave Meltzer, Kevin Ioli, guys who have been around for a long time, Neil Davidson of the Canadian Press, who can teach us about what it's like to be a journalist and to have ethics and to abide by the rules of journalism and whatnot. So I think that to me is like the next big step for us. And it's not something that I'm just like talking, you know, it's something, you know, there's some talks about it and whatnot. I'd rather not go into too much detail about it, but hopefully it will happen at some point. I don't know if it's this year, next year, 5 years, but hopefully in our lifetime. And I do think that for the most part, we're in a pretty good place. Are there things we can correct? Are there things we can be better at? Absolutely. And I think a lot of people have to realize that MMA journalism is not just breaking, you know, this guy's fighting this guy. You know, it's a lot more than that. There are a lot of stories to be told. There's a lot going on. And the fighters are so accessible. The promoters are, for the most part, very accessible. There's a lot of stories to be told. And if you're serious about being a sports journalist, I would suggest looking at MMA if you love MMA, because there are a lot of doors to be open right now.
All right. Well, since you brought it up, last question. If you weren't doing this right now, let's say that spontaneously all MMA organizations all just died at the same time, what would you be doing today?
I probably, if no one cared for what I was doing in MMA and there were no opportunities elsewhere, it would definitely be somewhere, you know, TV or radio production. I love that. Prior to doing this, I was working in TV production. I worked for ESPN Classic. I worked for Spike TV. I worked for HBO Sports. But I do love TV. I do love media. I love radio. I love podcasts. You know, I listen to yours all the time. I listen to many. I mean, my iPhone is filled with podcasts. All kinds of podcasts. I just love the way media is going, the direction it's going in 2012. So I would be doing something like that, probably something in sports as well, because that's what I care, you know, most about.
Well, Ariel, you do an excellent job, as I'm sure you're told every day, and I want to make sure you get a chance to get your plugs out here. Talked about social media earlier. Obviously, we'll talk about your Twitter, MMAfighting.com, and you've got a new sports reporter-style show as well, so let's talk about all of that.
Yeah. Well, that show is called The MMA Beat. Still not quite sure, you know, how long it's, you know, like how many times a month. Is it going to be like a monthly thing or a bi-monthly thing or bi-weekly? I don't know. We still don't quite know. That was kind of like a pilot, and it was very well received, and so I appreciate that. Like you said, kind of like the sports reporters, although I think we're way, way, way far off from that. Of course, Twitter.com, Ariel Helwani, and MMAfighting.com and Fuel TV. And I thought this was actually going to be a gang sneak attack, and you guys were going to get mad at me for having Meltzer on the site. But it sounds like you guys are cool with us having Meltzer work on the site as well, which is great. And listen, is it a coincidence that he joined us and then joined Twitter at the same time? You know, do you want to give us a pat on the back for that one? That's up to you. But I think at the end of the day, we all walk away happy customers.
That's right. It is actually some combination of the three of us that I think got Dave on Twitter, because you have been harassing him forever. And I'm sure that Nason has as well. And I'm the one that actually set up that Twitter. So,
oh, you did? Wow.
I did. We did it over the phone.
He still needs a profile picture, though. It's a screenshot of the Wrestling
of the Observer
newsletter.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that. I think that works. And by the way, I do think that he needs to like learn Twitter etiquette, like replies. He doesn't do a lot of replies, and he hasn't quite figured it out. But it almost kind of works right now. It's very Dave Meltzer.
It is very possible. Very Dave Meltzer at this point. It's a work in progress, but yes, he's up there finally. So there you go. All right, Ariel, thanks again as always, and hopefully sometime soon we can have you back on again. It's always a fun time, and obviously always a lot to talk about. We did have you on during a week where there wasn't really a lot happening, and we didn't even speak of John Jones, but that's for another day.
I appreciate it, guys. You guys do fantastic work. I love the website. Josh does fantastic work. I really appreciate it. It was a big thrill be featured on the site and the newsletters and all that that I would read for many, many years. So I appreciate it.
Well, thanks so much. And, of course, thanks, everybody, for listening. We shall talk to you again after a while.